Okay, we're on the fourth and I guess our last shiur of the series for Elul. You got a shiur? Okay. And what's that? Okay. And Rav Soloveitchik, it's good because this is I have two sheets, but I think we're not going to get to both of them. It's sort of like he sort of segues into a middle part, which is a nice view in and of itself that we'll get to. So just by way of introduction, we've all been on the airplane, you know, when the breakfast, when they come around. So what do the stewardesses say when they want to give you coffee or tea? You know what they say? What? Anybody know in Hebrew? How do they say it? Teo, they do not say teo cafe. They do not say, anyone know how to say it?
Teo cafe?
Teo bevakasha? Cafe bevakasha? Right? Now it's ringing a bell, they say that. So what does that mean, literally? And then they translate it for you because, of course, they're you know, flight attendants. So what do they say? Tea, please? Coffee, please? And, of course, you know, how do you say that in English? How would you say it? Would you like some tea? So what does the please mean? Tea bevakasha? Right. We're not used to them saying please for anything. Here, take the tea. You know. What does the please mean? We're going to talk about this idea of please. I request what? Please take some coffee. It would be the best thing in the world if you would have some tea. It's a very interesting. I'm always struck by that. What's that? Is it British? When British people want to give you coffee, what do they say? Is it? Would you like some? Right? Oh, okay. Very nice. Please, it would be the greatest thing in the world. So this idea of please means even when it's not coinciding with an actual request, it implies a request. Please, I want something from you. And even if the thing that I want from you is for you to take something, nonetheless, the please implies that. Otherwise, why would they say, tea please? I don't have any tea. We're supposed to be giving you tea. You know, can I give you a special tea? That's an interesting nuance that you'll probably notice now when the flight attendant comes around the next time. I don't have any, thank you. Okay, so that's something that the Rav Soloveitchik notes in the language, this idea of please, in the language of the vidui. Okay, he says, Nachzor l'lashon, let's see where I am on the page in the first column. Nachzor l'lashon ha-Rambam v'otah halacha. So let's go back to the language of the Rambam. Kishiyaseh tshuva. The Yeshuv Nechato. When a person does tshuva and he returns from his sin, Chayav litvadot lifnei Hakel Baruch Hu. He has to litvadot, confess for God. Far amarnu, we already said, we noted, ki ein haRambam misalfil b'mtzilot greida. The Rambam doesn't, you know, mince words, for lack of a better term. May kaven efo ba'arvam milim eile. What did he mean when he said the words before God? Well, he says you should say, so he should have said a person has to confess. What does it mean that he has to confess before God? Blessed be he. We would know who he has to confess before. Right? Is there anybody else he's going to confess before? What in the world is he confessing? The ulam. He says, nonetheless, b'milim elu gilam haRambam shlosha ayonot. The Rambam revealed three ideas, shalosh halachot, three halachot. Nusach havidui shel kohen gadol b'yom haKippurim matchil ve'ana Hashem. The kohen gadol, remember on Yom Kippur, the highlight of Yom Kippur is the avodah, and when the kohen gadol enters into the, he's in the Beit Hamikdash and he's doing the sacrifices. So he confesses three times, ana Hashem. Chatati, aviti, you know, my wife commented recently, she said, I don't think she said she can't remember the last time she was in davening on Yom Kippur during the Avoda, but, you know, nonetheless, we're sure it's still there, okay? Ana Hashem, she says, Ana Hashem, right? Chatati, aviti, right? That's what we say.
Why do we sing it?
Why does the chazan sing it?
Why do we sing these?
Why?
Because
that allows us to recite it together as a congregation. Right? I don't know. I've never been in a... anybody been in a, like a Hasidic shtibel? Do they sing it like the same way? Nobody has?
I mean, I went...
And? They did not sing anything. So Asamnu, Bagadu, how do they do it together? I mean, the Tibor one, they just said it?
The Tibor was made at a certain point, but there wasn't ever...
They didn't do that? No, they just said it. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
They chanted it.
They chanted it.
It wasn't anything that was a song.
Right. We're just more melodious.
Oh.
Okay. So he says... So he says, the Gemara, second line of the paragraph, we have a rare tivosha nusach. The Gemara derives this nusach, this language, minayin sheba ana. How do you know that the Kohen Gadol had to say the word ana? Minayin sheba shem ana Hashem. Right, and actually, just for your own information, the last line is ana bashem. Right, and he would say bashem, mishne Hashem. At some point during the video, the Kohen Gadol would say the same Hashem, the actual name of God. And that's when all the people would bow down and prostrate themselves. I often, just a note, it's worth noting, I often would say to people, and remember that this is the one thing that has, the kriyot, the hashta havayot, the bowing down that we do on Yom Kippur, is one of the few things that we actually do that remains since the times of Beit HaMikdash. That in the Beit HaMikdash, that's exactly what they would do. So we don't have the... We don't have the avodah, we don't have the actual korbanot and the actual vidui of the Kohen Gadol, but we do have the bowing down. And that's something that, you know, there's a certain connectedness that I always feel when we do that to Histachavaya, when we do that bowing down, because you understand and you realize this is really one of the original customs of the Jewish people that we've always done. Now, I find that very powerful personally. Okay. And the Gemara brings proof. So it's clear that that's the language that you have to say. Ana Hashem, Chatati, Aviti, Pasati, Lifanecha, right? Ana Hashem. The Da'at Rambam, according to the Rambam, no heget, nuscha zulo, the Kohen Gadol Bilvad. So that language is not only the Kohen Gadol. Elahi nuschat av l'chol aviduyim. Rather, it's the template for all confession. Shekulam nuschachim l'fi bidui Kohen Gadol. Everyone bases it on there. Hello, kochti b'halachazu. So the Rambam says, Ketzad midvadin, how do you say vidui, how do you confess? Omer, what do you say? Ana Hashem, chatati aviti pasati levanecha, v'ashiti kach v'kach. So if you've got something to say to God, you say exactly those words. Ana Hashem, chatati, you don't have to sing it. You can say it. But you're mentioning your sinfulness before Hashem. Mashma mikan. So we learn from here. Ki ledat ha-rambam ha-halachahi, she'i asar lo la'adam nikvadot k'kol ha'ule al-rucho, ela yesh nuschak ru'a levidui, so the Rambam says, basically, if you want to confess to God, you don't just say whatever you want. You know, God, I really feel terrible, I'm so sorry, I feel bad. Rather, you have to say the certain language of Ana Hashem, that this language is already, it's entrenched in halacha, that you have to say this particular language. So the Rambam, asks a very simple question. Ma pirush Ana Hashem chatati aviti pashati? Somebody want to explain that for me? Translate it for me? What do the words mean?
Please, Hashem, I sin.
Good. Aviti from Luvat, I sin, right, I transgress. Pashati.
It's very serious.
Right, Pesha is considered more serious. So the three levels of sin. Chatanu, Sachma, Avinu, Kichatanu, Chamar, Avinu, Kipashanu, Avinu, right, those are different levels of sin in increasing order. What's Ana mean?
Please,
God. Right, so now, where else do we, by the way, we have the language of Ana in Davening? Where else do we find that language of Ana? Hallo, right, what do we say? Ana Hashem, Hoshiana. Ana Hashem, Aslichana. What does that mean? Ana Hashem, please God, Hoshiana. Please save us. Ana Hashem, Aslichana. Do you ever wonder why you say Ana there? Makes more sense. It's perfect. You don't wonder why I say Ana. When I'm saying God save me, it makes sense to say, please God save me. I need you, please. What are you saying here? This is what the rest of the Rav he says here. Okay? Ana kelashon bakasha. So we understand, Ma pirush Ana Hashem chatati aviti pashat. What does it mean? Ana kelashon bakasha. the language of Anna as a request, Muvenet, is understood, Asher Kohen Gadol Kore Kaperna. Anna Hashem Kaperna, please God, atone. Please atone. Achma Perush, Anna Chatati. Please God, I sinned. Does God really, is that a please?
No.
No. So what in the world are we asking for? Anna Ma. Anna, please what? It's a very good question. Excuse me. Anna Lashon Bakasha Bidolahi. That's the language of Bakasha Bidola. Great request. Uma Yivakeshkan. What are you asking for? Chatati. Please, God, I sinned. I want to sin. What are you asking God for? V'ulam, he says, nonetheless. Be'ana ze. And by the way, this is the language that the Rambam has. And the language that goes all the way back that the Rabbanan learned in the Gemara from the Ketuvim. So this is the language always of Ana Hashem Chatati, please God. So what are you asking for? What's the please for? Please always implies something.
That he should forgive us.
You didn't ask for forgiveness. When you say Ana Hashem Kaperna, then you're asking for forgiveness. But what do you mean when you say, please God, I sinned? What are you asking for when you say please? And even better question is, what are you asking for without actually asking? You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you're asking for mercy. What's that? Ah, please God, listen. Very nice. Okay. Anyone else? But you're not asking for that. Remember, this is before you can say, "Take it away from me." You're saying you have to confess your sin. You have to say chatati. So you haven't gotten to that yet. So it has to be please of introduction. Very close to what you're saying. This is what the Rav Shlomo says. Ulam ba'ana zeh remuza utuna etem ha'efsharut shel chazara b'tshuva. And this ana, this please, is hidden, and tamuna, tamun, is referred or packaged, I would say, tamun. I don't know. Wrapped up, the possibility to return in tshuva. In nazin heitev, if we listen carefully, nishma b'kriyat zaka zo shel ana bakasha gedola b'korad. They listen carefully. Says the ana is a very, very heart rendering request. Ana, please, al na titrok b'fanai et hagelet. Please do not slam the door before me. Ana, please, al na tinal tinal et hashar. Don't close the gate. Kaini lomar masha, please. Right? What does the please mean? I have something to say. Please listen. Please open up. Ana, please. Havola fanecha tilatenu ve'al titalam bitchilatenu. Ein imen haKadosh Baruch Hu poter tzar ledovkim b'tshuva. If the God doesn't open the door, those who are knocking, nisharim hasharim ne'ulim shugurim, then the gates remain closed, locked. Ana, this please, ze'akahi, it's a cry, ki lo yisgeru hasharim, that the gates do not remain closed. Ki viduyenu, that our confession, yikanes v'yishama, will enter and be heard. Nimrod she'en lavo b'shar hamelach b'labush sak, shar chata'in v'abonos. You can't come before the king wearing sin. Meaning, if you want to come before the king, here's the problem. Who are you that the king should listen to you? Meaning, before you had said your vidui, before we said our vidui, we're soiled. We're sinful people. We're, you know, dirty, in a sense. So can you imagine, you know, you just went, you know, you've been out in the garden or whatever with your children, and you're a mess, and you have to go, I don't know, for a job interview. Okay, so can you imagine going to take that interview without first cleaning up, taking a shower? No. And let's say you stink to high heaven. Would you go to the job interview? What's that? No. So you did. Okay, and you're knocking on the door, and you want to take the interview. What are the odds that the person is going to even listen to you, hear a word you said? Not good. That's not a very good way to take your interview. Yeah, please, can I have the job? But that's exactly what we're doing to Ribbono Shel Olam before we do tshuva. And so you knock on the door, and you say, but I want to say I'm sorry, but you stink. you're dirty. You're soiled with your sinfulness. So why should he even listen to you? So the Chazal understood that before you can even recite a vidui, you have to ask God for the permission to listen to you. So what's the only thing you can say?
Please.
There's only one word, because as soon as you open your word for something else, I know that I smell. Right? As soon as you start saying something else, what has God already done? He tuned you out. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you start to say, wow, I feel terrible that, oh, please, no, I'm not interested. You know, go shower and then come back. But I can't. You're the guy that's got the water. So what's the only thing you can say? Please. Sometimes the word please, it's just, you're laying it all out. And then when you lay it all out, then the Ribbono Shel Olam can say, open the door and say, okay, what do you have to say? You know, Shakati, Aviti, Pashati. And then the whole world is open to you. And then you can say Kaperna. Well, but he has to be listening in order for it to work. Right? You need to be able to... Let's say you did something so... I don't know. You got your husband so mad, so angry at you that he couldn't have it. Good? Good, then I picked the right person. So he doesn't want to talk to you. He's just so angry, he's just not, he doesn't want to talk to you. So how do you apologize? You really did something bad. I don't know, you know. Let's assume it's not terrible, but he's very, very upset. He doesn't want to talk to you. So if he doesn't want to talk to you, how do you apologize? So the answer is, just listen for a minute, please. And if he gets to you, alright, go back here. If you catch him, what? As soon as you get the what, then you can sort of, you know, say your piece. But that's what he's saying, and that's what the Amar is all the time. It's a very, very beautiful thing, because on the one hand it conveys the idea of our sense of smallness, I think. That here we come to approach tshuva. Tshuva is not a right. Tshuva is a mitzvah, is an obligation, but you have to remember that tshuva is a gift from Hashem. That in reality, if we asked Hashem for what we deserve, all we would have would be din. And how many of us would survive if all we had was din? Enter? No, no, that's right. No, it wouldn't be good. All of us on our level, right, come up short. Because as soon as you don't come up short on that level, you're ready for the next level. But if we understand that tshuva is a gift from Hashem and that we have to ask for it, or say, Hashem, please, that puts us in a whole different perspective. And I think that on some level that's important for us to realize, Rosh Hashanah, I have to do tshuva. But don't expect it. Well, you expect it. Oh, okay. So if I do tshuva, Hashem will accept me. Well, you know, we'll see my tshuva. And he will. But at some point, that expectation becomes a sort of demand. See, I'm here. Okay. Did my tshuva. And if we don't see it for the benevolence, the greatness that it is. We just see it as part of the process of the year. And so if you really mean the ana, if you really mean it, ana is it's not just the bakasha. What's ana? What's a better word for please? Really please. I don't know in English. We don't have that word. Does Britain have a word? Not really. Ana is nothing else to say. You know, it's not even used. I've never heard it used in modern vernacular. It's only in, like, biblical vernacular. In Talmudic vernacular. Ana is when you've got nothing else to say and you, you know, to put it all out there. Ana. And I think that's a very important way to look at tshuva. That you have to sort of, you really have to lay it all out there and understand before Hashem that tshuva isn't a right. It's a privilege. It's a gift. And that when Hashem gives us that gift, we have to accept it for what it is. and not take it for granted. Okay? Tshuva, Rav Shalom Lessig continues, two paragraphs from the bottom on side one. Tshuva, Deshehila Atzma, Harehi Devar Bilti HaGyomi. Tshuva on its own is incomprehensible, doesn't make any sense. Bilti Mitkabel Al Hadat, nonsensical. Ava Malachim Enam Yodim Uvinim. Tshuva mahi. The Mali angels don't know what tshuva is. There's a very, very famous piece of Agadita, very, very famous piece from the Midrash. So the Midrash says that when a person sins, right, they came before the Malach Chachma. They said, Shalu et ha-chachma. They asked wisdom, right, what should happen to the sinner? So if you ask someone who's wise, what should happen to the sinner? Right, they say, right? What happened to the sinner? He should be punished. He should be punished. Fine. So they said, they asked Chachma, that's wisdom. If a person sins, he should be punished. Punished. Okay, and when he's punished appropriately, then he's, you know, then he's okay, and then he can go forward. They said, they ask, I'm going to go back to this in a second. I have a sort of an aside. Maybe you're interested in it, maybe not. They asked Nevuah, prophecy, Achote, what should happen to the sinner? What did the prophecy say? Same thing. Should be punished. Shalu l'kutshav richu chote mashtav. And so they asked God, they said, what should happen to the person who sins? And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam said, yashuv mechete v'yitachir. God said, okay, as long as he does tshuva, I'll atone for him. And what Chazal were trying to convey, I mean, obviously there is no guy named Chachma that you could go to him and ask him. But the idea of this wisdom, philosophers throughout the ages grappled with this notion of tshuva. It made any sense. I say I'm sorry, and then God forgives me for making mistakes, or for not making mistakes, for intentionally contravening his will, just because I feel bad. So what do you feel bad? What's the consequence? No consequence. I don't want any consequences. I don't want punishment. I want you to, right? Lo, you know, punish us, cleanse us, that's what we say. I don't know if you ever notice this language at the end of Yidui. You ever notice it's in your Marek Virachamecha Rabim Abalo Yide Khalaim Rayim Yisirim? Right, okay, God, please cleanse us. And by the way, don't make it hurt. That's what we say. You ever notice that? It's very, I always catches me when I read it that way, when I say it. It's like, what do you want? You mean you really want, you know, I have to say this as a side. Do any of you follow what's going on with the financial markets in the United States of America?
Yes.
We're all following it, I think. I'm sensitive to it because it affects us very, very strongly. So the government, apparently, it looks like they're going to bail out the American financial system. And I personally think this is a tremendous mistake. Why do I think it's a mistake? Not, I mean, in the short term, for all of us, it will help. Because it will put the financial system back on its whatever, and everybody's going to be okay. But the nature of the world is as follows. If you make a mistake, and you don't pay for it, mm-hmm. What's going to happen? You absolutely will do it again. There's no disincentive not to make the same mistake again. And the mistake that's made by American society, I don't know if it was the same way, I'm sure it was the same way in the whole world, is there's a sense of overarching greed. That everyone needs to be better, and I think that this overarching greed really is the heart of, you know, something that all of us are. It's not just banks; it's really all of us. Right? That I want my stock to do better than it did last year, and because of that, you know, people sell stocks that aren't doing wonderfully. There's no sense of long-term gain and waiting things out like it used to be. It used to be you bought a stock and you kept the stock. You bought Dow Chemical in 1940. Right, in the 1970s, when you go to sell the stock, it had doubled or tripled or whatever it was. But people don't want that anymore. They want to buy the Dow in 2008, and in 2009, I wanted to double or triple. So there's that greed. And so what do? And then I punish the executives who don't do that. So then they do things that are foolish, that are not good for their companies, in order to perform what's expected of them. So who's responsible? The answer is all of us are. There's a level of responsibility for everyone. So if the government of the United States bails out the world and says, you don't have to pay for this mistake. So what are people going to do? They're just going to do it again. And at some point, what's going to happen when we do it again, when we don't learn our lesson? And the government can't bail us out. And the government doesn't have the money to do it. You're looking funny. It's going to come.
Yeah, but greed is always
there. That's exactly the point. So how do you temper greed? No. You know how you temper greed? You temper greed by learning the lessons that come to you from overarching greed. Right, how did they solve the problem of the Great Depression in 1930? If you don't learn the lesson, if you don't suffer a sense of pain from a mistake, then you make the mistake again. It's just natural. You know, they say that, children who are born without a sense of pain, that's the most dangerous thing you could have. Right? Because they'll stick their hand on the fire and they won't know that it's burning.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. That's a problem.
I think that they say, well, don't worry.
100%, because nobody wants to understand responsibility.
If you said, what you're suffering now is a result of greed, then maybe. But
I think that everybody would realize over time, if everybody did suffer the way, you know what I'm saying? But people don't want short-term suffering, and when you delay the suffering, it's like a parent. Think about it. Why do we punish our children?
But you can only punish them when it happens. If you punish them a week later, or even
100%,
then they don't understand.
As they get older, they do. But let's say you don't punish your child, and he makes a mistake. It's it'll be okay. You don't punish them. It'll be okay. What's going to happen eventually? They're going to do it again, but what? It gets worse. And the parents, I think, that they're helping their children by overlooking the small things. Now, obviously, every parent is another one. Children, what I'm saying, in evaluating situations. But you don't do your children a service by not punishing them. You don't.
I agree with you 100%. And I see around me all the time, people don't bring up their kids properly.
Right, it's all their fault. It's everybody else. Thank God I don't have that problem. You know? but it's true. It's just, there's a truth to it. And I think that if the world doesn't feel the pain, the punishment of the mistake that it made, it's only going to be worse later on. Much, 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 much worse. Because there will come a point where the government can't bail anybody out. And then it's going to be severely worse. As opposed, and everybody wants to, it's only the same problem. Why are we doing it? Because the markets will go down. So what? So it'll go down. And people will lose money. Yes, they'll lose money. Well, yes, they are. Yes, they are. 100%. It is very big. But what's going to happen if not this time? How big is the crash going to be when the government can't bail you out? You understand what I'm saying? And there will come a time. Because if it doesn't correct itself in the proper way, you say they're going to correct it by regulation. But the regulation wouldn't be, if people don't feel that pain, then nobody would feel strong enough to say that there has to be regulation. The New Deal only happened in 1930, whatever. Roosevelt was only able to push it through because people were so desperate because of the Depression. If there hadn't been a Depression because the government had bailed out corporations, we would be much worse off today than we are. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand, but I feel like greed is like hunger.
You have to teach your child not to. Of course, we teach our children not to want. We teach our child only eat when they're hungry, only eat what they need.
But you can't teach them not to be hungry,
How do you teach them the control? How do you teach them the control? Exactly. How do you teach them the control?
By showing them that you by I think by regulating that you don't let them eat too much candy.
Or if you do, what happens? Sometimes you do, and what happens?
They get stomachache.
Right. Well said.
But they never don't want the candy.
100%. But you have to teach them.
That's the same thing when I'm saying. People feel greedy. Of course, you look at. Look at the other stuff that's going up and up and up, and you want your stuff to be going up and up and up.
Right.
But I don't think that desire to be earning better returns is what causes.
I got to tell you, I find my investing incredibly frustrating because I'm really like the old style, I want to invest in the stock and hold on to it. But I feel then now that that's not the climate in which things work. Right? If you know anything about finances, like companies that are really good, solid companies do poorly because they're just making money year after year. There's no potential for them to make a gazillion dollars. Do you understand what I'm saying? And like being solid and being firm and being well-rounded doesn't do anything in today's market. And that's very, very frustrating. So who gets punished? The people that get punished are the people that sort of play by the rules. So unless that corrects itself, at some point, you know, it does very badly. And I think that's what this notion of tshuva, like, okay, you know, well, we're really sorry we, you know, like, made very bad bets. We feel terrible about it. We're very sorry that we, you know, lost gazillions of dollars, trillions of dollars. We're really sorry. Can you make it better for us? And what we're going to do? Salachti, we forgive you. Why? Because we don't want to suffer the pain. But without that level of pain, without the punishment, without the yisurim, right, there is not going to be a kapara. It doesn't make any sense. It's not logical. It's not good in the real world. The only time we want it is with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Please forgive me. And sometimes he says yes, and sometimes he says, I don't think that's good for you. You know, the thing that you want, like a parent.
Does it hurt you or your wife when you have to punish the children?
I don't know. Does it hurt you when you have to punish your children?
Sure it does. Sure.
You're happy. I'm not happy when I punish my children. A person is happy when they punish their children and there's a sickness. It's a sadism. But I think there is a sense of understanding that even though they don't like what they're getting, that this is really what's best for them. Like, are you happy when you have to give your child medicine? Let's say your child bangs his head. So you're putting the ice bat thing on their head, and they don't like it. So, I don't know, I take it off, it hurts. So are you happy that they're crying? No, but you hold it on there. Why? Because they need it.
Right, exactly.
You know, nobody wants to feel pain. I'm new here, but I say this a lot. Right? The only time, there's no instance in the world in which you grow in which you do not feel pain. I think women understand this better than men, but think about the most growing experience you ever had, right? Was that pain free?
Absolutely. I don't even want to go back there.
There you go. Right. And the more, and ironically, the greater the level of pain in the real world, right, the more the instance of growth. No. Usually, I believe it's always yes. I personally believe it's always yes. Think about it. Think about, let's say, you took some online course. It was a breeze. You got your certificate, and you didn't really learn anything. Did you grow?
I think pain is
pain. No, pain. Pain is, I don't mean pain necessarily. Pain is not always bad. Pain is difficulty, strife. Could be emotional pain, could be physical pain. You know what I'm saying? You exercise. Okay? Think about it. Right? No pain, no gain. You feel it the next day. And what if you didn't feel it the next day? All that means is you didn't walk very hard. And we know intuitively. We know emotionally, right? If tshuva is going to be a meaningful process, it's going to hurt. Because you're going to open up certain wounds, certain parts of your personality that you don't really want to go. You're trying to avoid. So if you want to avoid that pain, then you're not going to get it. You know, I really mean the word pain. You know? But it's true. And so this notion of, well, please forgive me for nothing, it's only God that can do that. Only God. Because it doesn't make sense in this world. By the way, that's one of the major themes, just so you know, it's one of the major themes, according to many commentators, of the book of Yonah. Is there Yonah left? Okay. What? I did? What? Okay, fine. So then I won't go into it. I won't go into it in general. But okay. So let's continue into the with the website. Okay. Let's go back to second to last paragraph. Tshuva k'shehi l'ashma. Tshuva on its own. Harehi davar bilti hakyoni. It doesn't make sense. Bilti mitkaber al hadat. Ava malachim enam yodim uvenim tshuva mahi. Right? The angels don't know what tshuva is. Hem sogrim et ha'sha'arim. They close the gate. Aha, Kadosh Baruch Hu choter kav yachol kemin machteret b'rakia. So the angels close the gate. So what does God do? He digs under, right? God himself has to avoid the angels in a sense and go around the gate. Kedei lekabel et hashavim b'tshuva. Right? It's God's underground railroad. Zohi zachat ana ifnei havidoi. This is the cry of Anna, please, before Vidui. Anna, please, chator lanu chatira, dig that hole, make our tunnel, patach lanu hashar. Right? Open up the gate. Bifnei Vidui charabim lahakdim tefila. Before the Vidui, you have to have a prayer. Anna tavol lefanecha, please let it come before you, tefilatenu. Ve'al titalem mitzchinatenu. And do not titalem. Do not hide yourself from our prayers. Ba'adam lomar chatati. A person comes to say, I sin. V'sabor she'elokim kaviyach l'chayav lahavzik et hashar patuach lebanav. If you think that God has to God, if I come, God's going to, well, he has to. No, I say I'm sorry, and he has to forgive me. It's almost like I said last week, you know, when you go to a friend who says, you forgive me? But you have to. You know what I'm saying? If I come to you and I feel terror, and I sin before you, and I say, you know, it's the rest of the time. Are you mocking me? I think you should be mocking me. How would you feel about that?
Not very good.
What's that?
Not very good.
Right, you think I should be mocking you? How about you show some remorse first? You know? Then maybe we'll think about it. Ain't so tshuva, top of the second line, common column. No, that's not tshuva. Alav, and we said, remember, the essence of tshuva is really the emotional tshuva. Alav lahachush ulahavin ki hasha'arim ne'ulim. You gotta understand, the gates are locked. Ki hachata'ot kvar na'asu. The sins have been sinned, have been done. V'atah, now, kadesh yuchal lashuv aleihem, before you can do tshuva, in order to do tshuva, chayavu lizok, to cry out, v'lidfok harbei, u'bechazaka al hasharim. You have to bang on the gates, and you have to cry out, shiftechu lefanav v'lifnei avidui asher lo, that they should open the gates. You know, open the door, please, please, please open the door. You have to feel that sense of urgency, that sense of need. If anybody's ever been to the bank at 2:59 and they closed already, and you have to get, you know, take care of this thing, and the guy says, "Sorry, we're closed," and you say, "Please, I need to get in." Kaviyachol, imagine you want to do tshuva, and Ribono Shel Olam's door, the doors are locked, and he says, "Sorry, no admittance today." And he said, "No, but I've got this business I have to do." Right. The chance that they'd let you in, right? Or the chance that they wouldn't let you in.
No, that's in Israel, you can compensate.
Right. Right. Once they're closed, they're closed. In Israel, I know a guy, I'm your old friend. What?
It's important to me.
Yeah, okay. Come on in. It's true. Okay. So you have to bang. He says, "I potech shar l'dofkei b'tshuva." The language is that God opens the gate l'dofkei, the people that knock for tshuva. Ne'amar v'lo la'osei tshuva o l'ba'etra. I mean, you don't just get in if you want to do tshuva or you come to do tshuva. V'lid v'tikacha zaka u'mimushechet al ha'sharim. Without strong knocking, extended banging on the gates, yefshar la'osei tshuva v'lo mar vidui. You can't do tshuva. You can't say vidui. If you think that it's coming to you, then you misunderstand. Then it's not really tshuva. You have to understand that it's not coming to you. And that because it's not coming to you, you have to ask for it. And only when you ask for it and you really feel that Hashem is doing you a favor by even listening to what you have to say, then you begin to understand what tshuva is all about. And I think there's an essential psychological truth to that as well. Right? Because if you just, I feel bad I do tshuva. If you think, you know, you really do feel bad. But you don't think that you're not deserving of tshuva, then really how bad do you feel? You know what I'm saying? Like how distraught really are you if you think that the tshuva is coming to you? Why are you so bad? Come on, what are you so upset about? So I said, "I'm sorry. How come you don't forgive me?" And when a person says that to you, what do you say? Well, obviously you don't understand how I feel. You know, if you think that you just need to perfunctorily, you know, apologize, and that's really all you guys do, then you don't understand the level of severity that we're really talking about. Like when you understand how upset I am, and you express an appreciation for that, and what you've done, then maybe. That's what it means, dofke b'tshuva, to appreciate and to knock and to bang at the door of tshuva. Kol seder hatfilah, I'm the second paragraph in the second column. Kol Seder HaTfilah Shel Yom HaKippurim, the entire order of the Tfilah of Yom Kippur, Mitzchilah Va'atzof, from the beginning to the end, Mechuvan LeMatara Achat, it is directed towards one goal, L'Tfika Al HaSharim, this goal of banging on the doors, L'Tfok V'Lachzor V'Litfok, to knock, come back and knock, L'Tfok V'Lachzor V'Litfok, Anna, please. If you think about it, how much sense this makes. How many times do we say Vido Yom Kippur? Anybody know? Throughout the Yom Kippur day, including every Yom Kippur, how many times?
5 or 7 times.
All together?
7. 10 times.
10 times. Remember, one before Erev Yom Kippur. 2 at night, that's 3. 2 in Shacharit. 2 in Musaf. 2 in Mincha. And 1 in Ne'ilah. 10 Vidur. Does the Vidur change, by the way? So you would think, 10 Vidur. 10 Vidur. How many Vidur do you really need? How many times do you have to say sorry? Really, how many times should you have to say it? Once! Why in the world do you say, I mean, by the way, you know how many times are we repeating Yom Kippur? How many Slichot we say? How many times do we say Anu Amecha? How many times do we say the same thing? Many, 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 many times. So why in the world does Chazal do that? Well, first of all, they have to give you something to say. Because otherwise, what would you do all day? Right. Right, very much so. They wanted you to be in Shul. But even more than that, it's this notion of, it's a notion of sort of a pleading, an entreatment. It's not just you're saying tshuva, you're saying vidui. You're begging vidui. And when you beg vidui, you don't beg the first time, say, all right, I've said it, I'm done. When you want to knock on the gates and you're like, you know, let me in, let me in. But you say it as many times as you have to say it. And that sense, that's exactly what Yom Kippur is all about. Over and over and over again until you finally realize, maybe I should really mean it this time. You know, by the 7th or 8th time, instead of that frustration or the sort of repetitiveness kind of getting to you, we should really have this attitude, when we 7th or 8th time, you know, I only have a couple times left, I really, you know, I don't know if Hashem's listening. I don't know if I deserve to be heard. There's a sort of a sense of desperation, of panic. And when you have that sense of panic, what happens? That's when the Ribbono Shel Olam opens the gate. Because until you have that sense of dread, what happens if he's not listening? What happens if he doesn't hear me? And you don't really try. I had to send Tamira an email this morning. I sent it at 8 o'clock. So then I tried to call her, and I realized the email didn't go through, and it's 8:45, and, you know, so I had to call her. Why? Because what happens if I get here, and the printer doesn't work, and the sheets aren't here, right? And where the deadline begins to loom, what happens? The more desperate you become. And the greater the measures, and the greater the sense of desperation. That's exactly what Yom Kippur is all about. Rak b'tzilat ne'ilah, only when you get to ne'ilah, right after 24 hours, it drives you so crazy. Hayom yifneh, Hashemesh yavov yifneh, nevoach ha'sharecha. Alright, by the time the sun is going down, now we can enter into the gate. Rak az achar esum ve'arba sha'ot u'tzuvot shol ta'anit u'tfilah. After 24 hours of davening, of fasting, shol b'vital shamiv knocking on the gates. Only then Gisele said the gates are open. Because then, you know, what's left? If you don't have, then what? Gisele Perush HaMilim, this is what it means. Chayav Yitvado Lifnei HaKel Baruch Hu. When the Rambam said you have to say Vidui before God, Lashon Tfilah Yizu, it's a prayer, language prayer, right? He says you have to do vidui before God. He says what that means is, who are you standing in front of when you say vidui? Are you standing in front of God or are you not? When you pray, you're praying before God. Havidui ain't a tara ba'alma, right? It's not a vidui. All right, I stand. I want the world to know, or even like, you know, to declare to somebody. It's a prayer. Like impoverished, silenced people, we knock on the door. Last paragraph. Havidui, confession. Ikaro defika al hasharim hanu'ulim. It's banging on the gates, the locked gates. Lifamim hem miftachim lifnei hamitvadeh. Sometimes the gates open. Or lifamim. Oh yeah. Hem mishamim sgulim. Sgurim, Neulim, they're closed. Sometimes Hashem accepts, and sometimes He gives us what we want. Sometimes He does not. If it stands before God, and his whole existence, his whole essence is an experience of tefillah. Before he can say, before he can even say anything, please. Like, if you really feel that I have to stand before God, and I'm standing before God, and I'm sinful, and I have remorse, and I have shame for what I've done, and I don't feel I have a right to say anything. So before I can say anything, what's the first thing I have to say? Ana, please. Ana, tabola, fanachal, tzulatenu. Let me say something. And then when you say please, then you can say, chatati, aviti, pashati. It's a very, very powerful, beautiful piece. The Rav kind of throws in there. He has another piece as well about what this Hashem means. But it's a very, very powerful, emotional, moving piece to enter into Rosh Hashanah, and I guess also Yom Kippurim. That the tshuva is not a right, it's a privilege, it's a gift that God gives us. And like all gifts, right, the more valuable it is, the harder it is to do. Right, the most valuable gifts are the ones that we kind of reveal on our own. And I think that this notion of Ana, of asking Hashem to fear her, hear us out, is a very, very powerful one, and that it gives us the ability to understand what we have to sort of bring ourselves to before we can come to tshuva. And if we work on that, and we appreciate what it really means, and we allow ourselves to do the difficult work that could bring us to tshuva, it can lead to a very, very meaningful yamim yoreim.